Byron Radio.
The weather today, highs of 15 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade. It'll be a mainly dry day with long spells of sunshine. Now, one of the key areas we've been regularly promoting over the last few years, effectively, with the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, is the importance of small, medium enterprises. And the fact that, actually, if we're looking to build a country which is going to thrive in the 21st century, it's absolutely essential that SMEs are fully supported. It seems that they're not being by the government and other areas. And so to address this issue and maybe give us some pointers in terms of ways forward for that, we're delighted to welcome apprentice winner and businessman extraordinary, the fabulous Mark Wright. How are you, Mark?
Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. And the Managing Director of Altamore Bank, that would be the fabulous Ewan Edwards. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Alex.
Mark, if we can come to you first. You know, we're saying this line, it seems to be a no-brainer that surely we need to actually support the small businesses to make sure that things are actually working through that whole process. Because, you know, without them, without you guys, etc., the country's effectively shafted. We're doomed.
Well, this is it. This is it, Alex. I'm not surprised by the report that Altamore Bank have put out. It's finally bringing some light to what we've all known, is the government is not supporting small businesses enough in this country. In fact, you know, the small businesses are the biggest employer in the UK, and we need to give those people, especially in their first couple of years of trading, as much support as possible. And, you know, 71% of SMEs are not making use of the government structures that are already in place, and 36% don't even know that they exist. So we really need to refine the educational processes so businesses know what's available for them to take and make it easy to understand and apply for, like we're doing with the process that we're putting forward to the government with Altamore Bank, to make sure that we give people that best opportunity of being successful in the first couple of years.
That sounds eminently sensible and perfectly doable from the point of view of Altamore Bank. If we can come to you, Ewan, clearly, from your own perspective, offering straightforward products to small and medium-sized enterprises, homeowners, landlords and individuals, this is something where hopefully you can fill that gap in the market.
Absolutely. I mean, Altamore was created out of the financial crisis, and we are a specialist bank for SMEs. That's what we do. In fact, it's all we do. As you say, we take deposits from businesses and we lend back to businesses. So, you know, we're delighted to be wanting to do more to support entrepreneurs. You know, as Mark says, they are the lifeblood of the UK economy. There's 5 million small businesses in this country. There's a further 5 million would-be entrepreneurs who are currently employed who want to be SMEs. So, you know, there's a large untapped market there, and we, you know, we'd be delighted to support this campaign.
Mark, when you're winning The Apprentice and doing great things from that perspective, we often don't hear about these important, essential aspects of the whole side of things, but I think it's probably fair to say that even Amstrad Computers, when it was starting, would not have necessarily benefited or managed to develop if it didn't actually have assistance. What are the areas, Mark, from your own perspective, where small businesses actually need more support as well as they'd prefer it?
Well, it's really, you know, the startling thing that came out, Alex, for me in the report was that over half, in fact, almost all businesses trading that we surveyed, they had less than £1,000 active liquid cash in the business to trade with at any one time. Now, the reason I went on to The Apprentice was for that cash injection. You cannot run a business. You can't pay the rent. You can't buy the computers if you haven't got any money in the business. And part of the survey that we've put forward, if any of your listeners go to supportmoreentrepreneurs.com, they can sign up to the petition we're lobbying to the government, where we're going to create specific products whereby small businesses can apply simply and have that assistance and that cash leg up to trade successfully.
From your own perspective, Ewan, is this a kind of common thing that you're seeing, or are there other areas which you've sort of seen small businesses effectively saying, we've got challenges here?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of it, Alex. You know, as Mark said, you know, 80% of small businesses don't believe the government's doing enough. And I think when you look at, you know, the details behind that, you know, there are lots of grants and reliefs and allowances out there. But the fact is that they're generally quite complicated. There's a whole plethora of them. I think the forms are quite complicated. The awareness is low. People don't know where to go for help. What we're really saying is let's have a rethink. Let's think about how we can help SMEs and what can we do differently. And we've got some ideas about some new financial products that we think could make SME startups easier. We're borrowing some ideas from the ISA market. So, you know, listeners will be familiar with the fact that the Help to Buy ISA has really underpinned the housing market in the last few years and provided valuable support to first-time buyers. And we're saying, well, why doesn't that same principle read across to would-be entrepreneurs? Why don't we provide a tax-free savings haven to help would-be entrepreneurs save for that startup capital in the same way that we encourage first-time buyers to save for a deposit? So let's borrow those ideas that are well understood, where there's existing awareness already, people understand those things, and let's sort of, provide that simplicity and clarity to help would-be entrepreneurs start a new business.
Yeah, we've got a society now that, over 90% of businesses fail within 5 years. We need to stop looking at businesses like a tax, grab when they're starting up, and support those people early on to make sure that, we've got a society in the future that can employ from our entrepreneurs.
We've got a wonderful graduate in the studio, Shaley McKenzie. Shaley, you're sort of working a number of businesses, et cetera. Any thoughts or questions you have?
Yeah, so Mark, it sounds like you feel like small businesses are the future. Why do you think this?
Well, I just because we have, if you look at London last month, there was over 45,000 businesses that started last month. Now, that's so much opportunity. Those people are all going to be paying taxes. They're going to be employing people. They're going to provide products and services. Now, if you look at the companies, the big ones that avoid the tax, that employ offshore, they're not the small and medium-sized businesses. They're the ones that are giving back the most to the country and society, and I feel we give them the hardest run. They pay the most taxes. They get whacked with all of the big bills, pensions, and all of this. There's so many red herrings as a small business, and we don't look after them. It's so scary to start a small business, and we make those people pay and feel the responsibilities as the big businesses do, and I don't think it's fair.
100%. I mean, when I was probably about 18, me and my mum started a cupcake business, and just through sheer lack of not making any money whatsoever, and we weren't aware that there were services out there, it lasted about 12 months, and by the end of it, we didn't even break even.
Cupcaked out. If only Aldermore Bank had known about your cupcake, Shaley, it could have been a whole new experience.
Or Lord Sugar.
This is it, exactly.
Genius stuff. Where can people go to, gentlemen, to find out further details and information about what we've been talking about today? Where's the best place to head off to?
So we are launching a campaign. We've got a petition going on supportmoreentrepreneurs.com. We've got an online petition. We're looking to lobby the government with a view to influencing this autumn's budget. So please sign up. The more people that sign up, the more pressure we can bring to bear.
Mark Wright, as we said, apprentice winner and businessman extraordinaire, and Ewan Edwards, Managing Director of Aldermore Bank, we salute you. Take care now.
Cheers. See ya.
Bye.
Small things, with time they will get big. Gotta find your mission, a mission to pursue. You know you got a talent, whatever it may be. So work your magic and sing along with me. Song. I say scooby-dooby-dooby-dooby-bop-bop, boogie-boogie-woo, yeah, say all day long, see that's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it, that's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it, that's how you write a song. and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. That's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. That's how you write a song. Step one, believe in it and sing it all day long. Step two, just roll with it. And that's how you write a song.
Norway's entry into Eurovision 2018 hasn't quite qualified for the final yet. We'll find that out this evening when we have the second semi-final, I think, and I hope it'll go through. What say you, Shaylee?
No, I really enjoy it. It's really jazzy. Different.
Alexander Rybak, who has actually won Eurovision in the past, are writing another entry there. That's how you write a song. There's some reflexivity in that, which kind of appeals. Up next, we'll be probably having a listen to a little operatic choice, which is Estonia's entry into the Eurovision Song Contest with this extraordinary, I say again, extraordinary large outfit that's actually being featured in that. The actual set for this, I thought, was extremely impressive. It successfully got through the first semi-final, and led to a whole range of other factors. But before we actually get to that, we'll be talking to global trend advisor from stylist Steve Tews in a few moments' time. And it seems the travel industry is on the brink of a major revolution that will transform how people book, travel and interact with tourist bodies aboard. It's predicted that artificial intelligence and voice-enabled services will play a huge role in producing hassle-free holidays in so many aspects of people's lives. Soon, our personal AIs will have the ability to talk to a travel brand to arrange everything from airport transfers to hotels. So
it's happening, Alex. They're taking over.
So, yeah, I was going to raise that issue. Did you feel as though, have we reached that stage where already Google this week has said they got their assistants to make telephone calls, making bookings for hairdressing and so on and so forth, that you can work through that? Are you happy to hand over
all of your
data?
Does that mean they're going to get rid of humans?
I think it's originally designed for humans to have a slightly easier life, but who knows what the future could actually have in store for us from that point of view. I don't know. Does it fill you with trepidation, Shaylee, or is it a case of whatever, things will work out okay?
I mean, I'm always excited for advances in tech, but who knows what will happen?
Yeah. There does tend to be that line that's actually there. Anyway, we were talking about Estonia, and I think we were specifically talking about Elena Nechayevna. Apologies, I think I've probably got the pronunciation completely wrong from that perspective. And astoundingly, I'm not finding it in our system here. That's outrageous. After being that sort of build-up, we thought, are things going to work through, or is it just going to be a case of no, we look at something completely different. So maybe we actually should have a completely different change and actually go for another potential qualifier. This is Holland's entry. This is something I believe Tessa Snart would be particularly interested in.
Is it country?
It's country. It's nice. By Waylon. It's the Netherlands entry. It's Outlaw Inum.
It's a long way home when you're down and out here on your own. It don't matter who you are when it's time to lock and load. Everybody's got a little outlaw in them. Chrome piece hiding in the black top denim. Heartbeat beating to a rock and roll rhythm, yeah. Scarred up knuckles, blood on the boots and the back of buckle. Diamond back rattle with a quick strike venom. Everybody's got a little outlaw in them. Mm-hmm. When they knock you to the ground, you ain't gonna let nobody keep you down. When your back's against the wall, that's when you gotta learn to stand up tall. Be that rebel fight inside of you. It's been there all along. Everybody's got a little outlaw in them. Cold piece hiding in the black top denim.
tattoo that you can't keep hidden. Everybody's got a little outlaw with a gun. Oh. Everybody's got a little outlaw with a gun.
Everybody's got a little outlaw in 'em. Sage words from Waylon, yeah. Netherlands entry.
I feel like Tessa would really enjoy that.
I thought so. She's probably not listening to the
I'm
program.
Also pretty sure that guy is not native to Holland.
Well, you don't have to be, of course. You know, I mean, there was, of course, Celine Dion, who won a few years ago.
That's very true.
She was Canadian, but it's a different line entirely. We'll give you Cyprus's entry to take us round to our travel system. This is the one that has currently overtaken Israel in terms Ooh. Of the bookies' favourite. Whatever bookmakers know, and you know, gamble responsibly, as we'd always say, even when it is 90 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Siren Radio. Eleni, Ferreira and Fuego. It's a fiery number.
Into my eyes, yeah, the eyes of a lioness. Feel the power, they enlighten. A little look, a little touch. You know the power of silence. Yeah, keep it up, keep it up. I was looking for some high, high, highs, yeah. Till I got it, does it, you? You got me pelican, fly, 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 yeah. Taking me higher.
There is a cruel side to the whole Eurovision side of things, which might say that long before artificial intelligence started entering into travel, it was writing songs for Eurovision. That's not true. That could win this year. Cyprus's entry, Fuego, with Eleni Ferreira, and possibly the ideal number to introduce our next co-presenter and guest, Steve Tooze, of course, global trend advisor for Stylus. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, how are you?
Very good indeed. And Steve, I won't ask for your views on Eurovision because that's a different interview entirely, but we're celebrating the goodness that Eurovision brings to the world, really.
I think that's a fine thing to be doing this morning.
Marvellous. Now, what's hot and what's not this summer? Latest consumer analysis by Amazon in the hashtag SmileItSummer trend report has revealed some interesting numbers. Meat-free barbecues, for instance, and indeed handing over our travel arrangements to Mr. Computer or Miss Computer.
Yep, those are certainly two things we've taken a look at in this piece of research. Thinking about the barbecues, maybe that's a good place to start. Veganism is on the rise massively in this country. 350% rise over the last decade, the number of Brits who say that they're vegans. We're seeing worries about the environment, about health, about the ethical cost of meat rearing. meaning that we're turning towards plant-based diets. And so the barbecue, the traditional meat-based fry-up in the garden, is turning into much more like the beet-bacue. So it's about plant-based alternatives. Chicken wings are being swapped in for cruelty-free alternatives, things like coconut milk cheese, vegan burgers, sausages, all on the rise in the sales data. And also much more sophisticated. So they feel and taste like meat, which means you're not in so much danger of falling off the veggie bandwagon after a couple of months through sheer boredom.
Well, we trailed ahead last night to this particular feature with our co-presenters Hannah and Katie. They were very excited by the line of wild garlic tofu, and indeed the range of condiments, including Korean kimchi, up 98%. That's something. I mean, that caught me by surprise, at least.
Absolutely. Well, I think the meat. Or the meat, or the less meat diets, means that we're being more adventurous about the other things that we're trying to eat as well. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot. You know, fermented foods like kimchi is up massively, and we're also seeing, you know, more challenging toppings. So forget the brown sauce. We're looking at things like in Edinburgh, 400% increases in sales of things like Jack Daniel's barbecue sauce, and really hot chili sauces are huge in Cardiff this summer. So we're seeing a lot more adventurousness over a condiment.
And here was I thinking the Korean kimchi was all due to new friendly relationships with North Korea and Kim Jong-un, but perhaps that's a different line. Shaylee, any thoughts from yourself from this survey that you've been looking at this morning?
I'm not actually that surprised, because especially for my generation, we're becoming more aware of the meat industry and what is involved in that. So becoming a vegan, it isn't just a diet choice, although it may be for some people, it's also a lifestyle choice. And a lot of my friends are vegans, but not only are they vegans, they're also activists for animals. So yeah, that doesn't surprise me so much. And wild garlic tofu sounds amazing.
Changing the line and the species, I was particularly impressed with Doggles, new dog sunglasses. I mean, that has got to be a winner, surely, Steve. I mean, when you saw
what
that...
What about Dunglasses? Although I do prefer Doggles.
I think Doggles, Doggles would be my preferred term from that particular perspective. Did that surprise you, Steve, or did you think it was only a matter of time?
Oh, do you know, it was a surprise. The consumer lifestyle trends behind it, this move towards us seeing pets as humans, because we're living alone longer, we're having children later, so the dog becomes a kind of substitute member of the family and seen as a human. That didn't surprise us. We've seen that happening for a few years. But the way that it has developed through the sales data is really, really fascinating. I mean, things like Doggles, as you say, designer sunglasses for dogs, and also these other things like dog cooling coats, up 209%, dog sun bonnets. And even TV reality shows on Prime Video that you can play to the dog in the car to keep him or her happy as you make that long trip to Cornwall. So we were quite surprised by that, yeah.
I definitely would prefer a dog over a child, I have to admit.
There you are. The thoughts of a recent graduate from the University of Lincoln in English, I prefer a dog to a child. It could be an interesting future for the human race, Steve, but never mind. Were there any things that surprised you from this perspective? I mean, we talked about artificial intelligence and so on. Obviously, holidays, high adventure holidays, challenging both body and mind. Anything that you should have thought, oh, that was interesting. I wasn't expecting that when I was looking at the hashtag Smile It Summer trend report by Amazon.
I think the extent to which AI is now becoming such an intrinsic part of the travel industry, and the fact that it almost feels like the beginning of a second travel revolution now. You know, the first one being, okay, we can all travel now because we can afford to pay for flights, and the second one is this use of AI and how far along it's coming. There's a lot of hype around AI, but we're actually seeing, you know, Alexa, for example, can book you a taxi through Uber, can book you a holiday through Skyscanner. And
whether you want it or not, perhaps.
Definitely only when you want it. These are. I think that's one of the fallacies. This idea that they're taking over. I think it's much more a case of they're becoming really useful helpers much more quickly than we thought they would. And we think that by 2025, you'll have a personal AI that will be able to book your entire holiday for you. You'll be able to wake up in the morning and say, I fancy going to Morocco, and the AI will be able to go off and find just what sort of holiday you want, book the flight, get your favourite seat on the plane and have a taxi waiting for you at the other end.
But I can see a certain line, and I have this with Alexa, where sometimes you feel as though you're asking it to do too much and it kind of gets stressed. You know, you could say, book the holiday tomorrow, it gets all excited in its lovely binary digits ways, it books everything, and says, no, I'm not interested, I want to go to Edinburgh instead. You know?
That's interesting. That's an interesting thing to say about humans, though, isn't it? We clearly regard entities like Alexa as being almost human already. I don't think Alexa is upset, but it's interesting that I think 90% of us who own one say goodnight to her before we go to bed.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, personally, I'm thinking of buying her a pair of sunglasses just to actually sort of protect you. No, that's a step
sure
too far.
Make sure they're not
goggles.
That's
probably the main thing. Exactly. Not be good at all. Steve, where can people go to find out more details about the hashtag Smile It Summer trend report?
So take a look at amazon.co.uk/smileitsummer, and you can download the entire report, find out all the data inside, and also find out lots more about the hot products for this summer that you can buy on Amazon.
Nice touch there, hot products. See what you did there, Steve? Always thinking. Always on the sort of opportunity for that. It's like an artificial intelligence, but faster. Steve, it's been fabulous touching base with a good self this morning. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme?
I have indeed. It's been a pleasure.
Excellent. So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again and, I don't know, finding out hot trends for the autumn, which will be the next season we'll be considering.
Love to. I'm always ready to talk hot trends.
Do we always feel like we need to try? Why do we believe that we need to be somebody else to feel alive? Why do we why do we keep making the same mistake? And believing that it won't make a difference if we try to break away.
Jessica Mauboy, the entry for Australia into this year's Eurovision Song Contest, We Got Love. And as we keep reminding people, should they qualify and win, Australia wouldn't have the right to host the Eurovision Song Contest. They'd have to nominate a country in Europe to host it for them next year. Anyway, enough of such stuff. Let's move on to a much more serious aspect of life, and the notion of British schools needing to act now to prevent any repetition of the kind of attacks that, unfortunately, our colleagues in the United States have been suffering from. To address this issue, we're delighted to welcome mental health campaigner and, indeed, author of Angel of Islington, a memoir which provided a unique insight into mental illness, the wonderful Joachim Eleftheros. How are you, Joachim? Very good indeed. Now, you're just so we actually can set our geographical routine. You're in Australia now. Whereabouts in Australia are we reaching you today?
In Melbourne. Melbourne.
In Melbourne, that's okay, because I know there are different time zones, whether you're Sydney, Melbourne, all manner of bits and pieces from that. And actually, the time in Melbourne now is
6:32 p.m.
So there we are, so perfectly. 9:32 a.m. in UK, England, 6:32 in there. It's very, as we started the show by having midnight in Los Angeles, Joachim, you'll appreciate we need to make sure this global package is developed. Let's move on to this particular aspect, though, about your warning, which is very much to the fore here, of better psychiatric training needed. In fact, not just better, indeed, just psychiatric training needed to prevent atrocities like the Maryland shootings and a variety of other things. We've had a recent news that London has become almost a kind of crime-ridden capital for both gang warfare and a variety of other bits and pieces. Is this a case of you know, how did you come to this conclusion that actually what we need in terms of schools and education is more help and assistance?
Absolutely. So I'll give you some background on myself as a long-term bipolar sufferer. I understand what individuals go through in terms of delusional thoughts, mood changes, antisocial behaviour, if you like. And I think that triggers off events such as what we've seen around, you know, USA and UK. Therefore, I just believe that there needs to be more done to, A, relieve the stigma associated with mental health and create it as part of the health umbrella. So it's all about health, good health, practice good health. I've read recent articles where the UK government has funded, I think, £200,000 for teachers to be equipped with the necessary skills to pick up on the on signs of, you know, mood disorder, bipolar disorder, or schizophrenia, if you like. However, I think more needs to be done with psychiatric evaluations to prevent, as a preventive measure. So what that looks like, whether it's funding, whether it's more psychiatrists at school and organisational levels, is really depends on each country, yeah.
Already, colleagues who are actually in teaching at all levels, not just at university, tertiary level education, but in primary school education, secondary education, etc., are under pressure themselves in terms of working through this process. What would be your response to teachers who turn around and say, look, this is all very good, but we honestly don't have the time in our day to fit in yet more training to actually deal with this area?
Yeah, and somewhat I do agree with that comment. There's a lot of pressure on teachers, whether it's primary school, high school, university, to cope with the jungle that is the classroom, adding more pressure of having them evaluate students when they're not trained psychiatrists, trained psychologists, or trained behavioralists does make it difficult for them. But we need to work together with the schools, universities, organisations, companies to have a developed mental health program. I know it sounds like it's because of the stigma associated with the illness, it is getting swept under the carpet. And I did read recently that the NHS in the last 10 years or so has slashed 6,000 odd mental health nurses. So it needs to be driven by governments and psychiatric organisations working in tandem to fund a psychiatric evaluative process program, if you like, for schools. And also with the help of teachers and educators, yeah.
Our studio co-host today is Shaylee McKenzie. Shaylee, you've been looking at the reporting, the report that's come through here, listening to Joachim in Melbourne. Thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, so I actually suffer from anxiety, and there's always a stigma surrounded about that. And how would you say people can learn more about mental health? Because I do feel like in recent years, it has increased in terms of us as a society speaking about it, but how can people learn more about it? Because for me, the thing that I find the most difficult is trying to explain to my boyfriend how anxious I am, because he doesn't suffer from anything. He struggles to understand how I feel.
Yes, spot on, and it's a fantastic point. Ultimately, it's up to us as a society. I mean, this sounds very global oriented, but it's up to us as a society to embrace mental illness under greater health. So we have a lot of programs where we, you know, advise to eat better, to exercise. Well, we've got to incorporate the mental health within that. So it's not just about education and pamphlets and taglines. It's more about elevating the profile of mental health so it is encompassed by by health, full stop. So not just so there's no line or even a dotted line between mental health and just health in general. We can do that through celebrity endorsements. I know it's the endorsement sort of is probably the, not the best term, but celebrities coming out speaking about bipolar and schizophrenia and their troubles with depression. I know what you possibly are going through with anxiety, and the more people that make it an item that you can speak about at dinner, at work, at the school ground, the more we highlight the evolution of our society and the more understanding we are with regards to mental health, then it's certainly going to go a long way, because some of the mental health issues are helped, not hindered, but helped by socialising, by talking about it. I know for myself I was very much introverted when I was diagnosed, and the realisation that everything you've ever thought of as real, all those kaleidoscope images don't actually exist, they just exist in your head. That fall backwards leaves you very withdrawn, very detached. But the more I spoke about the illness, the more I reached out to my inner circle of friends and family, the more it was easier for me to come to terms with the illness and then manage it going forward. So that's what I would say, elevate the profile. Don't draw a line between health and mental health. It's all health. And slowly but surely we will diminish the stigma associated with mental health.
That sounds really good, definitely.
And yeah. Is there a one-stop shop? I mean, obviously it's a bit of a crazy question in many ways, Joachim, but is there a place, a website, that you actually would suggest initially people should actually check out to find out more about what we've been talking about today?
And where can people buy your book?
Sorry?
Where can people purchase your book? Can they get your books from all
Amazon,
the usual dealers?
Amazon
exactly.
Yeah, Amazon Books. Yeah, I should put a plug in.
It's always important. We'll help you with that, but I think it's important that things get these things through. It's Angel of Islington by Joachim Eleftheros.
On Amazon Books. Yeah, absolutely. UK. Or anywhere around the world for that matter, yeah. There are many organisations. So there's Mind, there's SANE, there's a lot of organisations you can go to. I think it's important if you keep up with, printed material as well, like press material about what's happening in mental health. There is a plethora of forums you can have conversations with. Just type in mental health or SANE, or I think it's Mind in the UK, and there are all organisations where you can connect with other people who have similar conditions, or just people who are just talking about their stories. It certainly does help, yeah.
Joachim, it's been a delight speaking to your good self this morning and touching base on a variety of things. I'm sure that a number of people are saying it's all very well for Joachim talking about issues. He's in Melbourne, Australia. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He's got sunshine every day. But
it's been raining today, Alex.
Well, exactly. You're heading into the winter, you see. That's the key thing. That's the other hand of the joys of being in the Antipodes. Originally named, I believe, because people were thought originally to walk backwards in the southern hemisphere as opposed to in the northern hemisphere. It's very strange, but still, that's it. And a historical point there. Joachim, take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the near future. Take care now.
Thank you.
Je suis née ce matin. Je m'appelle Merci. Au milieu de la mer, entre deux pays. Merci. C'était un long chemin et maman l'a pris. Elle m'avait dans la peau 8 mois et demi. Oh oui, 8 mois et demi. On a quitté la maison, c'était la guerre. Sûr qu'elle avait raison, y avait rien à perdre. Oh non, excepté la vie.
Je suis sa chance à notre survie. C'est là que j'ai poussé mon premier cri. Je suis née.
Lee McKenzie, one of the rare midweek drivettes who connects South Africa, Scotland and Lincoln in one bundle of bouquets for Siren Radio.
Much as Professor Fiona Moore connects Canada, Caldor City and Lincoln in also one bundle of magic, which is wonderful stuff. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Professor Fiona Moore from Royal Holloway College, London, how are you?
Delighted to be here, Alex.
Excellent. And a delight to have you back on board, so to speak, after another hopefully awesome Sci-Fi London 18, the coming-of-age film festival for Louis Savvy and the whole group from that perspective. And once again, yourself and Alan did us proud, I believe, together with Holly McGrattan and so on, by being our ambassadors and checking out the festival in full.
Oh, yes, it really was wonderful. I'm still coming down from it. Just a week of exciting and interesting films, lots of fun, plenty of interesting special events.
Not so many filmmakers
around this year, but I did manage to get business cards from a few of the people doing Frankenstein-themed exhibitions, which I think you'll like.
Excellent. This is because, of course, yes, that's 18 years of Sci-Fi London. 200 mm-hmm. years since the summer mm-hmm. that never was enabled Mary Shelley to effectively put together a creepy science fiction themed novel, which, as Brian Aldiss would say, is arguably the first official science fiction novel of the modern era, Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus. So, mm-hmm. where do you want to start? I mean, Shelley's with us, etc. Where do you want to start with the notion of actually raising the envy? And I say partly because there is a website you can go to find out all sorts of things about Sci-Fi London. But what highlights would you say that was one that was special for me?
Okay, well, the two best films I thought, well, my absolute festival pick was actually, it was in the program is Peaches, but it's a Spanish film, so if you're looking for it, probably best to use its Spanish title, which is Melocotón, Spanish for peaches. It was just this wonderful, delightful time travel rom-com, which, you know, it used the science cleverly to drive the plot, and yet, you know, it didn't get bogged down in the science. It was funny. It had lots of good lines. It also featured Port Merion in a few places, which is nice. And the University of Nottingham, so shout out to Nottingham there, sadly no Lincoln. It was just a delightful, retro, intelligent, witty piece. It deserves a wider airing. The second pick, I'd say, was the film Censors, which was a Russian piece, and I won't even try to pronounce a Russian name. I'm not in my skill set. Which I also thought was really clever and worked well with its premise. I didn't think the characters were as well developed as in the Spanish film, and also I thought it kind of it could have explored its premise a bit more. It sort of got a bit bogged down in violence. I mean, the premise there was an interesting one, which was that the idea that in the future there will be kind of video game policing, you know, so. Effectively, people go to video game parlors to participate in kind of VR MMORPGs, role-playing games. But because sex and violence sells, the manufacturers are continually trying to push the boundaries of what's in the game. And so these police kind of go undercover in these games as kind of mystery shoppers and deliberately try and push the boundaries as far as possible. And if the game lets them, then, you know, there's a raid on the parlor and everybody's busted. And naturally, of course, this takes its toll on the mental health of the people being the police. And so this the film is basically, you know, the plot that drives the film is that one of the these censors, these in-game police, has basically snapped and is psychopathically stalking one of his fellow censors. And it all just basically goes downhill from there for everybody. But, you know, I liked, I thought that was a very clever thing to do, very plausible, very believable. It was shot on a budget of 50,000 euros, which I almost can't believe, you know, it was just so well done. But I think they just made very clever use of locations and drone footage and, you know, pulled in a lot of good favors and just made a very, very clever film.
And, of course, when it comes to budget, remember, our very own Daz Scales, Darren Scales, course, can make pretty darn good stuff using what many people would say was a fraction of the budget, a minuscule compared with Avengers Infinity War. You don't need to necessarily have Disney-style budgets to produce good quality narratives.
Indeed he does. I mean, I've been thinking lately, I'm a little annoyed by the way people sometimes use the phrase low budget to kind of mean bad, because, you know, yes, there can be bad low-budget films, but there can be good ones, and likewise, there can be some very bad high-budget films, you know. I found it a real chore to sit through the Suicide Squad, for a start, and that had a budget larger than the GDP of some countries.
Well, exactly. But at the same time, Suicide Squad did actually have Margot Robbie as the Harley Quinn. So,
as Harley Quinn, exactly. Yeah. So that was one of the things that disappointed me a bit about it, because, well, first of all, you know, she was great in the role, and, you know, Harley Quinn is a great character, but it just sort of felt like they didn't really explore in the way that the comics and other media have explored. Harley Quinn is such an interesting psychological character, and, you know, her relationship with the Joker is such a tragedy in a way that, you know, I thought it really deserved more screen time, but, you know, it kind of... It just kind of seemed to, apart from that one little flashback thing, which again could have been a lot better done, it wasn't really terribly well explored.
If only Harleen Quinzel had actually stuck to her medical studies and never actually taken that job opportunity in Arkham Asylum. It would have been a wholly different
world. Absolutely.
Never mind.
But we'd have had fewer good stories.
It's the narrative.
This is true, yeah.
It's the narrative. Shaylee, anything you'd like to quiz Fiona on about Life of the Universe, or indeed Sci-Fi London 18? It obviously we've had a peach of a movie, so I did that.
Nice.
Pun intended. Sensors connected as well from that perspective. Any other areas you'd like to develop?
Yeah, so have you ever been to Sci-Fi Scarborough?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Oh, no. I was going to ask, like, which one's better?
One of these days we will get Fiona Moore and Alan Stevens to attend Sci-Fi Scarborough. It's coming up to it'll be its sixth year next year.
And the weather was so nice as well.
It was very, very impressive. So, but then equally, I haven't been to Sci-Fi Weekender. So, you know, I haven't crossed over to Wales as yet, which is probably on the list, hopefully, for 2019. Nice. I've been speaking to our mutual colleagues, David J. Howe and Sam Stone, about doing various other bits and pieces. Let's not wish our lives away. If I was to actually sort of pin you down, Fiona, and say which of the movies that you saw at Sci-Fi London would you say this, if you were given a few moments to sort of spend on the planet Earth before it, this is the one I would actually say go and watch that, check that one out.
Well, as I said, definitely Peaches. I also did want to sort of briefly mention the short films, because there were a few really quite good ones. But one which, you know, people should check out was hilarious. It was called, was it Contraception? Something like that. It was Contraconception, I think. It was, you know, the old, you know, the old paradox joke about, you know, if going back in time and preventing World War II by shooting Hitler.
Yes.
Okay.
It's about two time agents who are trying to prevent, not bothering to shoot him. They're just trying to prevent the conception of a future dictator. And so they're going back in time and trying to persuade his father not to have sex with his mother.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, again, sort of events spiral out of control as a result of various things. But it is just, you know, it's you know, reminiscent of Joss Whedon at his best, if you like, you know, just kind of 20 minutes of zany fun.
But it's the age-old thing, isn't it? Like, the butterfly effect. So even though he wouldn't have been conceived, would there have been another person who would have taken over that role?
Perturbations in the time stream. How often have we spent the entire world considering that, those perturbations in the time stream? Sorry, Fiona.
Yeah, one of the other things I did this past week was I went to the Doctor Who Appreciation Society's annual meeting in Crawley. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because Lala Ward was one of the guests, and she said about science fiction that good science fiction to her is something that where it takes just one scientific idea and goes with it as far as it can. And so that in some ways was one of the things I was thinking of whilst reviewing Sci-Fi London. You know, does it not just does it tell a good story, but is there an interesting science idea at its heart that it plays with in interesting ways?
Well done, Lala Ward. Obviously, the time spent with Tom Baker and Richard Dawkins has actually sort of resulted in all manner of things. He says, without any patronising comments whatsoever, no, let's face it, Lala Ward was actually a female Time Lady. Time Lord, Romana Dvratralunda, following Mary Tam. What, a female Time Lord? Surely some mistake. No. Who knows what could happen on that one. Fiona?
Well, she did say that she was asked, you know, how would you feel if Romana reincarnated as a man?
Mm.
And she said she would actually be quite happy with it, but she recommended Tom Baker for the role.
Nice. Exactly. Yeah. I bet that might have got a smidgen of applause, if not a little...
Oh, yeah.
A few guffaws as well on that basis. Was wonderful stuff. As ever, you have proven to be expert, as we knew you would be, in summing up the whole sort of sequence on that basis. So thank you once again, Fiona, for doing some fabulous work on that basis.
Anytime.
Will you be checking out the Eurovision Song Contest on Saturday, or indeed the second semi-final this evening at 8 o'clock?
Of course. I will be there with my popcorn, cheering on the finalists. Go Israel, you know.
Well,
I think they've got a good entry.
Netta and Toy, we've featured a couple of times. Shaley, possibilities, you think? Or are you gearing more towards Cyprus as a possible winning entry?
I liked Cyprus, but I also liked Norway and Holland. So
Norway have yet to qualify. They won't hopefully do that tonight.
Yes,
likewise, Holland. So they may not be in the final. We're wrapping up today with the time-travelling theme, clearly connected with respect to Eurovision. It's going to be the Lithuanian entry that sort of wraps us up from that point of view with When We're Old. Or just chronologically gifted from that perspective. It's Lithuania's entity with Leva Zazimauskaite, but I'll leave the pronunciation there. I'm not a Lithuanian specialist in this particular aspect, but again, we'll put it in there. Still, the world recovers from the shock that Azerbaijan have not got through the qualifying stages. And yet Ireland have, so make of that what you will. We certainly thank Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar today. In fact, it's been a nice show which we've connected Gibraltar, Melbourne, Australia with Los Angeles, and indeed even London, England with Lincoln, which is all good stuff there. Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, with his reviews of Avengers Infinity War and the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Society. Ian Lennox, Phil Leonis from Los Angeles, Mark Wright and Ewan Edwards from the World of Business, Global Trend Advisor from Amazon and stylist Steve Tuzer, Joachim Lethrus from Melbourne, Australia, and of course Fiona Moir. Last two questions for Fiona, please, Shaley.
Fiona, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
As always, Shaley.
Brilliant. And will you be back in the not too distant future?
Anytime.
Yay. It won't be too long, hopefully, before Fiona might be able to be in the studio.
Oh, looking forward to that.
Possibility. Shaley, this is your
Live.
Not that she's not live. No, of course, it is a live recording. We know that because we can say the time in Lincoln is just coming around to 3 minutes to 10 a.m. in the morning, and presume it's the same time in London, which is marvellous.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Shaley, this is your last midweek drive because you've got a full-time job. Yay!
Congratulations.
I'm a real boy.
I knew that degree qualification was going to pay dividends
eventually,
but we might well see you on a midweek drive on Wednesdays before two.
Well, indeed.
Well. That's it. We're out of here. What should we actually use? I suppose, given the reference to the prisoner and Port Marion, we'll just go out with "Be Seeing You." So after three, a one, two, three.
Be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
first time we met. We've come a long way since then, and now we'll do it all again. From your very first smile, I knew that I'd walk a mile. See, it's for real, and you know you never wanna let go.